You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romero, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. We're finally here. After months of speculation, of wondering what would happen, whether or not this season would ever resume, whether or not basketball would ever be played on a court again for at least some time, the bubble, everything that's happened since March, only 6 months ago, but it feels like much longer. And tonight, the NBA Finals kicks off with your Miami Heat taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. What a sentence. And we're finally here. It's unbelievable. And like, I don't really ever take the moment sometimes when you try to come up with a daily episode or when you're covering games or when you're doing all the things that are required to cover a basketball team like this. You don't get a lot of stop and smell the roses moments. But this has absolutely got to be one. Like, I spoke about it in a couple podcasts ago, right after the Eastern Conference Finals ended with Miami coming away victoriously, I might add, that this was absolutely an incredible season, that every player has something to prove, that every player and member of the front office, I'll be honest with you, has had a reason for this success to be much more meaningful than it might normally have been. But let's even take away all of that. Any chip on your shoulder that you might have, you're in the NBA Finals. There are players that spend their whole careers, great players that spend their whole careers never reaching this level for a number of reasons. And that even once they get there, they could wind up falling short and not winning a title. Miami, having won 3 championships already, having been to the finals 6 times in the last 15 years, it's still a special moment. And here we are. And I'm so glad all of you are here with me on this journey, because it is, you know, I don't get to see your faces. You get to hear my voice, but I get feedback from you so much. And all I see on Twitter and via messages and the emails that I get is such incredible excitement. And I am so appreciative and so grateful that you're all a part of this with me. And I just have to say, I am so excited about this series, regardless of the outcome. Now, of course, an NBA championship would be an incredibly great cherry on top of everything that's happened this year and this season. But it's still a fantastic opportunity to be able to cover the finals, to be able to see this team with this collection of personalities be able to overcome everything. The adversity of the bubble, the impact of the world around them, it's just unfathomable when you stop and think about everything that they've gone through up to this point. And it is incredible. It's so exciting. And it's such a great, great opportunity to see them on the floor, to see these incredible matchups. I am getting goosebumps just thinking about it. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, old playoff nemesis like Dwight Howard and Rajon Rondo and other peripheral roster players on the Lakers. And Miami gets to challenge all of them. And we'll see. We'll see. Like, there are so many things going on over the last couple of days. All I keep hearing is Lakers in 4, Lakers in 5, that this Heat team doesn't have the talent, that the talent gap is so wide between LeBron James and Anthony Davis and everybody else in this series. Who knows? That might all be true. I personally don't think so. I think it's a lot closer than people expect. But there's this Western Conference elitism. There's this idea that, well, yeah, I mean, Jimmy and Bam, sure, they were able to get their team to the Eastern Conference Finals, but yeah. It's only the Eastern Conference. The path that LeBron James had to go through in order to get his team out the West. I am so sick of these narratives. Look, Ben Golliver, friend of the program, great guy. There is absolutely a Western Conference elitism. Like, that is some bloodbath that everybody who makes it out of there is somehow forged anew, and that they are absolutely the greatest, most victorious warrior who have ever graced the face of this planet. And somehow the Eastern Conference, as it's often referred to, is just basically invited because they have to be. And that if there's a reason to abolish the Eastern Conference, it's because they're not all that good. Let's keep in mind, shall we, that the Miami Heat have won championships, that the Cleveland Cavaliers have won championships, that the Chicago Bulls have won a number of championships, that the Detroit Pistons and Boston Celtics and on and on. representatives of the East have taken on these allegedly great members of the Western Conference and still wound up beating them. Look, I understand perhaps the depth of great teams in the West might surpass that of the Eastern Conference, that somehow in the East you can have a sub-500 record and still manage to make the playoffs. I get all that. That does not take away from who manages to get past the East, whether it's Miami in this case or any other team. But the Heat beat the best team in the NBA by a wide margin in the Milwaukee Bucks. As far as record, as far as numbers, defensive efficiency, offensive efficiency, everything. That was a historically great team in Milwaukee, and Miami wiped the damn floor with them. So I am getting a little frustrated and a little fed up at hearing about how great LeBron's journey had to be to get past a falling apart Portland Trailblazers team with Hassan Whiteside on that roster, to be able to get past a Houston team that was starting 6'5" Robert Covington at center, to be able to get past the Denver Nuggets that have fallen apart in the Western Conference Finals over the last couple seasons. Listen, I don't think it's as great a challenge as people are making it out to be. And regardless of all that, this is the bubble. This is a great equalizer, as I've mentioned many times before. No team has been able to accomplish this ever before. They've all been on an even playing field. Nothing is given. Nothing is taken for granted. And Miami has long had the attitude that we're going to come here, we're going to bust our ass, we're going to work as hard, we're going to outwork everybody else. And goddammit, it's paying off. They managed to beat a more quote-unquote talented younger core in Boston. They beat the MVP in Giannis. And they took T.J. Warren's ass and sent him back to Indiana, and they got Nate McMillan fired in the first place. I mean, that's, when you look at what Miami's been able to accomplish, nobody's giving them the flowers. No one's giving them the credit. It's this scrappy little underdog, and maybe they are. And you know what? They love to hear that kind of talk. Yeah, they're the scrappy underdog. Damn right, until we punch you in the face and we rip your ankle apart. How scrappy is that for you? So we'll see what happens. I'm excited about it. So many great stories. I know I'm starting to get a little too excited. It's the bane of a journalist's experience that they have to remain unbiased when clearly that's impossible, because as human beings, you tend to gravitate towards the team that you cover the most or those personalities or things of that sort. And long this season have I mentioned that this Heat team has been as fun to cover in person, to talk to on a regular basis, as any I've ever seen. Perhaps more than any. I mean... It's just been an incredible journey, and I am so grateful, and I'm looking forward to it. So this is going to be an odd episode, because with the finals taking place later on, I wanted to get to some of your questions. I asked for questions after the Eastern Conference victory on Sunday. Never got around to them because I was doing something similar to what I just did, which is going a long monologue about everything that this season has meant and what they've accomplished to get to this point. And then, of course, I had my preview of the NBA Finals with Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers. If you haven't heard that, there's still time. Go check it out. So I'm going to answer some of your mailbag questions now. And I'll start off with this one, which has been, an extra big burr in my side all week long, which is Spo finally considered a Hall of Fame coach from Stephen? Well, I think we're starting to see a lot of that become recognized around the league. And I will point out that LeBron and his media availability on Tuesday spoke pretty glowingly of Eric Spoelstra and said, look, he's a good coach, probably a great coach, and then kind of got tangled up in his words. But the overall impression was that he understood that Spo works his ass off, that he gets your team as ready as possible. But when you consider everything that Spo has accomplished over the course of his career, look, he's been to 5 NBA finals. I don't care after that. That's it. That's all you need. You go to this point, whether you win them all, lose them all, or whatever, you're a great coach. And absolutely a Hall of Famer. So I understand, Stephen, that it's been talked about. You're going to see a lot of people debate whether or not Eric Spoelstra deserves to be considered one of the top five coaches. And I think you see a weird mix in response to this kind of topic being brought up, because there are some people going, oh, hey, this is still a conversation. I can't believe this is happening. And it seems kind of weird that they're bringing it up with a great deal of surprise, considering the fact that you'll get, just a few months ago, jackasses like Dan Dakich saying, he's not even a top 10 coach, maybe a top 10 coach. And that is just absolutely ridiculous. Like, his preparation, his understanding, his composure, this playoffs has been an eye-opener for me, or maybe not an eye-opener, but at least just driven home the point that Eric Spoelstra has been Miami's superstar this postseason. You can talk about Tyler Herro. You can talk about Bam Adebayo. You can talk about Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, et cetera, et cetera. But Eric Spoelstra has done such a phenomenal job getting this team ready, making the changes necessary, making adjustments, having the courage, the balls on sometimes to just make a hard decision, to bench guys, to bring guys off the bench, to understand what's necessary. I got to be honest with you. I am so excited to see what he's got up his sleeve against LeBron and the Lakers. Maybe they can't match up with AD size. Maybe they can't match up against LeBron's passing. Maybe it's the other players on that Lakers roster that wound up crushing Miami to some degree. But I trust that Eric Spoelstra is going to find a way to figure it out. Coming up next, I'll be answering whether or not Jimmy Butler can afford to be passive early on, and I'll explain why he needs to be as aggressive as ever in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Continue safely supporting restaurants in your community. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. I know in Florida things have opened up considerably, but you can still order out, you can still have things delivered directly and safely to your door, and you can lend that support to restaurants by using DoorDash. Ordering is easy. Just open the DoorDash app, you find your favorite restaurant, you choose what you want to eat, and that food will be left outside your door with DoorDash's new contactless delivery drop-off setting. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. It's the app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Want to keep hearing my coverage of the NBA Finals? Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and to always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Continue to answer some of your questions about the NBA Finals and beyond. It's going to be an exciting series. Can't wait to get into it. But one of the concerns that I think a lot of people have is Jimmy Butler's maybe not lack of aggression, but he certainly has been not as aggressive as we'd like. And he's been very effective. He's not been dominant. And as I've explained before, he doesn't always necessarily need to be. Miami can find a way to win without Jimmy being the most aggressive player on the Heat team. They need him to be an all-around contributor, a great defender, passer, and occasional scorer, and to be able to slow the pace of the game down by getting to the line. But there are times when you want Jimmy to show up early, if for nothing else, to set the tone. And so this other question comes from Steven also, who asks, considering it's the finals, will Jimmy stick with his wait-and-see approach to each game? I don't think he can afford to. I'll be 100% honest with you. I think it's part of what makes Jimmy great is that he can make those adjustments on the fly. He understands the nuances and subtleties in a way that very few players do. And I talk about this a lot because I think it's worth bringing up. There are very few players in this league that can afford to wait and see. And I think LeBron James is one of them. And I think Jimmy Butler is another. Very few players can afford to take a step back and say, well, maybe I'll just pass. Maybe I won't try to be aggressive. Maybe I won't try to force things. Maybe I won't try to get to the hoop. LeBron can certainly do it. We saw it for 4 years. We've seen it for 6 years since then. He is perhaps the very best to ever do it. But Jimmy is solid in his own right. He doesn't turn it up as much as I'd like him to do so. He can have big moments, big quarters, but more often than not, he's not putting up those gaudy numbers because he's trying to do a lot of other little things. He's still a better defender than LeBron is at this point in his career, although I think you could make a case that LeBron was pretty solid in that series against Denver. So that is a concern. You're not going to get Goran Dragic and think that you're, you know, getting LeBron out on an island. Goran can't get past LeBron James. So, neither can Tyler Herro for that matter. The point is that I think Jimmy needs to be aggressive. He has to be. And he's willing, I think, to take on the challenge of guarding LeBron. Like, it's one thing to be deferential to him, to understand how great LeBron is. But that's not the time for this. Like, he needs to be able to step up. He needs to defend him. He needs to play his ass off. Because, look, he's already this late in his career. He's never had this opportunity before. I think he understands how important it is to be able to have a great series and to do everything possible, because these opportunities are not afforded anybody. This next question comes out from Soyrum, who asks, how do we handle the Lakers' size? Hey, that's the million-dollar question. I don't know that anybody has a clear approach to that. The reality is that it's going to be extremely difficult. I think it benefits Miami in some ways, and it's also going to be impossible to stop in others. Dwight Howard isn't a concern, because seeing what the starting front court of Dwight, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James, clearly a much bigger one than Miami's of Jimmy, Jay Crowder, and Bam Adebayo. I mean, that's a difficult one. I am not concerned about Jay's ability to handle Dwight Howard. I think he's got the strength and the moxie to be able to do it at this point. Obviously, the matchup that is most concerning for me is Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo, and whether or not that gets Adebayo into foul trouble, something he brought up in his presser earlier today, that he understands he cannot afford to get into foul trouble because he's such a valuable player, because of so much of what Miami does well, runs through Bam and functions smoothly because of Bam. So avoiding that. As I've mentioned before, also, one of the things that Eric Spoelstra loves to preach is do what you do well and then force the opponent to adjust. If Jay Crowder's knocking down three-point shots, who's going to pick him up? Is it going to be LeBron? Is it going to be Dwight? Are you getting him out of the paint? And if that's the case, then that frees things up for Jimmy to be able to drive. You know, there are tweaks to the way that you do things that could dictate the flow of the game and how Frank Vogel and the Los Angeles Lakers adjust. And I think that's the ultimate question for Miami, is how do they figure that out? Is it a matter of making changes or doing what you do well, as Spo likes to say, and then forcing the Lakers to adjust? And that's personally where I tend to lean. I think if Jay makes those shots, then you have to guard up on him. And that puts Dwight away from his comfort zone. Now, could you switch Dwight onto a less mobile player or a guy who's not going to be stretching the floor like Bam? Sure. And put Anthony Davis on Jay Crowder? Absolutely. But I like that matchup a little bit for Miami, too. I think Bam can get past Dwight Howard, and I think he can flourish in pick-and-roll situations, and I think he can continue to make plays for others. So there are changes there. The Jimmy-LeBron one, I think, is going to be not a wash. I don't want to use that terminology considering what happened with Daniel Tice. But I think that I think LeBron's going to be able to stymie Jimmy to some degree, but Jimmy's going to have to be very opportunistic and aggressive in getting his opportunities. He's not going to get LeBron into foul trouble, let's be honest. And if he's hunting for fouls, he's not going to be able to get them because it's LeBron James. He's not going to get those calls. So Jimmy has some issues to work through. I think he's aware of that, and we'll see what happens. It's up to guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to be able to limit Duncan Robinson, to be able to continue to work around those screens and see whether or not Duncan can get those shots dropping. I have no concerns about whether or not Duncan can catch fire, because I think we've seen it before and we'll see it again during this series. I think it's going to be huge. The Goron matchup, that's a little trickier as well. You know, what happens with him? Is Danny Green going to be the one to catch Duncan Robinson? And if that's the case, then can KCP lock up Goran Dragic? I like that matchup for Miami too. I know I'm probably sounding like I'm being very irrational in this sense, but I really do think that there are things that Miami can do better, and can do better than the Lakers. It's not going to be as easy. You're not going to get any sweep talk from me, but at the same time, I don't think the Lakers have a clear advantage. The bubble equalizes everything, folks. I'm going to keep bringing this up. Nothing that we've seen up to this point makes a lot of sense. Yeah, the Lakers were favorites. So were the damn Clippers, and they got their asses beaten in the second round of the playoffs. So were the Rockets, and look where they are. Nothing makes any sense. Miami is in the NBA Finals. They earned this opportunity. That changes everything. Omar asks, are the Heat staying small against the Lakers, or are Kelly and Myers going to be inserted into the starting lineup? I don't see that being a possibility. I like the fact that Kelly is going to be able to make an impact. I've said it a couple times already, and I'm going to continue to say so. I think that Kelly had an opportunity in the Boston matchup and did not take advantage of it. He did not make those shots. He was not able to stretch Enes Kanter, get him off of out of the painted area. And that's unfortunate, because that's what Kelly does well. He makes plays. He can stretch the floor. He can put the ball down on occasion and make a pass to somebody or cut. He can get his open looks going. And unfortunately, he just wasn't able to do so. So I'm not sure why he didn't. I don't think it was anything on Boston's side of the equation. I'll be 100% honest with you. Perhaps we used up a little bit too much of that mojo when we were getting Kelly, Bubble Kelly earlier on in the seeding games when it didn't matter at all. Now is when they matter. So I think there's an opportunity there. Hell, for that matter, I think there's an opportunity for Myers to. I don't want to slight Myers. I know Myers started against the Lakers on both opportunities, and he's a great floor spacing big, a little bit slower. Does that take Dwight out of the paint? I don't know. I really don't think that he's going to be making those changes. I don't think Spo is going to be willing to start Myers at this point. They're not going to be reinserted there after this much time. I think they found something that they like and that they're comfortable making changes if necessary. If the Lakers can dictate the necessary adjustments, then Spo will make them, but not going into the series. I think they're comfortable with where they're at. That's not to say that we won't get an early appearance from Andre Iguodala or Tyler Hero, Solomon Hill. You never know. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit about the zone defense. Are we going to see it? And is it going to work against the Lakers? You're listening to Locked On Heat. You're going to need some energy over the next couple of weeks. And the best thing to do is to grab yourself a Built Bar because it's the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than ever. 18 amazing flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, raspberry German chocolate, so many different flavors to choose from. You can build a box with your favorites. They're 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't even know that you're eating a protein bar. And Built Bars are healthy. They're great for the health conscious person. If you want to lose or maintain your weight while indulging a delicious treat, the bars are low calorie, they're low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for you. And they have all the nutrients you're looking for. So right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off, go to BuiltBar.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat, or you can always send me a message via Twitter as well. Those DMs are open for all of my listeners. Continuing on with some of your questions that you submitted earlier in the week, this next one comes from Miami Heat Singapore. How effective do you see the Heat zone will be against this big Lakers lineup? It's been a huge point of contention, I think. There are still some stigma attached to the zone. I think you're starting to see that less and less. It's kind of a gimmick. It's viewed that way. It's something that you should do in college. There's this idea that you're supposed to man up, and that has all sorts of connotations to it, that if you want to be able to lock somebody down, it's about going man to man and mano a mano and being able to shut them down one-on-one. But you know what? Let's be honest. There is so much versatility and athleticism. It's impossible to do that on a regular basis. And so on occasion, you go zone. And it throws a monkey wrench into things. You're not sure how to do it. You're so used to going off the bounce, creating on those one-on-one situations, on having those ISO opportunities, that all of a sudden you go zone and you're not sure how to deal with them as an offensive player. Now, there are ways around it. I think that LeBron James is the ultimate zone buster because he's so good from the mid-range and he's so good at passing. There's another school of thought that maybe you just, quote-unquote, build another wall against him the same way you did against Giannis Antetokounmpo. I don't think they're the same type of player for that specific reason, that if LeBron is shut down in the painted area, he can't get to the rim, which is obviously one of his greatest strengths. First of all, there's a good chance that you're going to get into foul trouble. Even more than Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron will get those foul calls in his favor. But outside of that, let's say you do build that wall. Guess what? LeBron's a pretty damn good passer. He's going to find somebody out in the perimeter to knock down those shots. Now, that puts pressure on KCP, on Caruso, on Danny Green, on Rajon Rondo, etc., to be able to knock down those shots. Those are Los Angeles's danger perimeter threats. And that's probably more advisable than wanting LeBron to take it to you. But it's still a concern. I think that given the limitations of a Dwight Howard, if he continues to stay in the starting lineup, I imagine that he will, you'll probably see a lot of zone. And you'll just kind of have to see how effective it is. Now, look, to my point earlier in the show about how Jimmy Butler has that wait-and-see approach, obviously LeBron does the same thing. And one of my concerns is that he can afford to lose game one in this series, kind of see how that zone plays out and say, okay, I've got that filed. I know how to break that zone and then come and find a way to sweep the next four games. It is a huge concern of mine. Now, I don't think a sweep is realistic, or rather a gentlemanly sweep in the next four games. I don't think the Lakers are going to beat this team in five. I don't think they're going to beat them at all, but that's a whole other story. I also do have concerns about LeBron's robotic computer-like mind and his ability to process things and figure out what's necessary and to make those adjustments. I talked about this on Locked On NBA just yesterday about how his adjustments can change a series. We've seen that through the course of his career. And so, look, even think back to that series against the Chicago Bulls where they dropped that first game and all of a sudden everybody was like, whoa, this is a Bulls team that can really challenge them. And then, of course, they got punched in the face and knocked out for the next four games. So that's how LeBron plays. He can't afford to take that step back and say, okay, I see what you're doing. I don't like it. I'm going to change and throw a complete and total change of plans at you. And let's see how you adjust to that. And good luck. Is the inconsistent three-point shooting a concern going to the finals? That question comes in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Absolutely. I mean, how can it not be? The reality is that you need the three-point shot to fall in order to beat this team. You're not going to be able to create enough points in the paint. Now, you have to be able to mix it up. That's one of their strengths. They have been the best team in the bubble and during the regular season at getting points in the paint. They will be able to attack you with their size. Between Davis and James, you're going to get a lot of points out of that. And, of course, it also changes when you have Dwight Howard, who only scores in the paint. That is just the reality. You have to be able to even that out. You're not going to out-duel them in that sense, but you have to be able to get some shots up there. You have to be able to get the easier baskets. You have to be able to find seams in defense and get to the rim. Having said that, you also need to have that three-point shot falling on a pretty regular basis because it's a killer. It'll break your back. And I think we're going to see a return to the kind of shooting that we've seen from Miami earlier in the bubble and during the regular season prior to the hiatus. It's been their strength all season. You have to tip your hat to what Boston did well. There is no Marcus Smart on this team. There is no Jaylen Brown, no Jason Tatum. That's not their strength. They don't have to shut you down. They're gonna punch you by getting to the rim, by getting you in foul trouble, by clubbing you over their head with their size. Danny Green's a really solid defender. KCP has been really good in the playoffs. He has been inconsistent over the course of his career, but in the playoffs, he's been good. I still like that edge in Miami's favor. And I know I keep coming back to this point, but I just, that's my feeling, is that Miami will be able to get those shots. I don't think that they've seen, look, they have seen. They know what Miami presents. LeBron talked about how well they move the ball, how aggressive they are, how hard they play for 48 minutes. Those are oversimplifications. And at the same time, I think he's tipping his hat and acknowledging what he needs to prepare his team for, just like Frank Vogel will. And I think they understand how everybody on this team, Miami that is, cuts, how they're constantly moving without the ball, making things difficult for defenses and forcing them to break down. So it's going to be a challenge. You know, you're going to see the Bam matchup, whether he's being guarded by AD or Howard. It's going to be a huge thing for Miami if they can get a slight edge in that one way or the other. And so seeing Bam create opportunities for guys like Duncan, Tyler, and others to work off those dribble handoffs could be a key to this series. So it's going to be really, really exciting. In order of priority, this question comes from Steven. Which three Heat bench players need to show up in the finals? Whew. I got to be honest with you. I hadn't really given this as much thought as I'd like. I think off the top of my head, Tyler here first and foremost. He is a great difference maker because of his offense, because of his aggressive, because we saw it. Like, when Boston had things shut down, Tyler just said, you know what, I'll do it. If Jimmy can't get his points, if Goron can't get his points, if Jay's not knocking down that shot and Duncan's not able to or is not aggressive enough to take those shots, Tyler has shown the ability to do so. So he, first and foremost to me, is a huge X factor. You can throw Andre Iguodala into there as well. And for me, that third player has to be Kelly. I've seen him shoot too well over the course of his career and for the Heat to just dismiss his impact. Like, that's a guy who can make a difference because he is a legit 6'11", who can stretch the floor, who can make passes, who can put the ball down. We've seen the Kelly keeper. We've seen him be able to fool opponents. We've seen him use his footwork in the paint. It's just sometimes it doesn't always click. It doesn't always work, and I don't know why. I don't think he knows why. But if he can get a productive series, he could be a huge difference maker. So to me, those are the three players that need to come off the bench and make the most impact. So I'd like to see what happens. I'd like to see whether or not Eric Spoelstra feels comfortable going to Willenik, considering how short he fell in the Boston Celtics series. He can be a huge factor in Miami's favor. Ricky asks, if all the Heat players play the same and Miami wins a title, who is your finals MVP? That is the million-dollar question. I think it's pretty clear to me, however, that Bam Adebayo was the best player in the Miami Heat series against the Celtics. I think you could make a pretty strong case that he was the best player in the playoffs, that he's done his job as well as anybody could, that he shut down Miles Turner, that he did everything he could to limit Adetokounmpo, that he was a huge factor against the Celtics, with the exception of Game 5, which they lost, and he took very badly when he was probably dealing with a severe injury. So, given all that, if somehow Miami's able to win this series, and we keep getting the impossible-to-predict contributions from a Jimmy or a Tyler or a Goran or Duncan or anybody, and somehow Miami wins this series, you have to give it to Bam. Because of his ability to be able to limit what Anthony Davis can do, which I imagine would be any kind of factor in any sort of championship for Miami, if he's able to lock down AD or limit him to some degree, if he's able to continue to play and produce and have aggressive scoring nights the way he did against the Celtics, then absolutely, he is the MVP, which is great at 23. I tweeted this during Game 6 against the Celtics. We saw another young player do this in his third season in Miami, to be able to just bust out at the right moment, to have a coming out party, to get the attention to become a Finals MVP. I'm referring to Dwayne Wade, of course. It'd be a hell of a nice little circle to close there for Miami, to be able to draft Dwayne in 2003 for him in his last season, to help mentor Bam to some extent, and for Bam to have the ownership of this season, to be given the freedom, the reins to just do what he has done so effectively, to become an all-star, to grow, to just become a borderline superstar in this league, and for him to have an incredible series against the Lakers. I know he wants it. He is that kind of guy. He comes across as very aw shucks and humble, and look, he's a joy to talk to. As friendly a guy as you'll get in this league, very, very friendly, shakes hands, just chats you up. He's great. But he's aggressive. And he wants this. He wants to prove a point. You don't think the idea of going up against Anthony Davis and hearing already that Anthony Davis is going to beat you up and having that Kentucky connection come and be thrown in your face, that AD is the superstar, that AD is an MVP, and that you're just a guy who contributes a couple rebounds and blocks, etc. You don't think that sticks in his craw? It does. It keeps him up at night, boys. And I'm curious to see how he responds, because he's got that fire. We've already heard the story from that great Zach Lowe piece earlier this season, where a former Kentucky, it was John Calipari himself, I think, kind of tweaked him a little bit going into a matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves and Karl Anthony Towns, another Kentucky alum, and being told by, telling Bam, well, Karl Anthony Towns, Cat's going to steal your lunch. He's going to punch you in the face. He's going to get all his points against you, et cetera. And of course, Bam goes out and shuts him down. So, hey, Coach Cal, if you're listening, give Bam a call. Piss him off a little bit, because we could use that kind of fire. Either way, speaking of fire, I am excited. I hope that you're listening to this just hours before the NBA Finals tips off, that you're getting as pumped up as I am, that your hair is standing on end, and that you're thinking about the possibility, the very realistic possibility of a Miami Heat championship, because it's going to be fun as hell to see this series play out the way I expect it to. I think Miami's going to have a great opportunity to win and to collect their fourth NBA championship. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.